Tested is sponsored by Duke Health, where cancer researchers have made it possible for patients to receive stem cell treatments at home. More information at dukehealth.org. Tested also receives support from Hungry Harvest, delivering farm-fresh produce and kitchen staples to your door starting at $15. Every delivery fights food waste and supports local hunger-solving organizations. HungryHarvest.net.
I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, no good options. Thousands of teachers in North Carolina are currently faced with a difficult choice, or they've already made it. Go back to teaching in-person classes or continue to teach virtually and minimize their risk of exposure to COVID. But in truth, it's not even really their decision, at least not entirely. During the COVID pandemic, many teachers may want to stay home and teach remotely, but administrators, tasked with getting enough teachers in classrooms to teach kids whose parents want them to be there, may force those teachers into the educational version of a Sophie's Choice. They can either keep their jobs and teach in person and risk their health or the health of a family member, or quit the profession they love.
I know of dozens of teachers whose accommodation requests have been denied.
Vanessa Barnett-Loro, a fifth grade teacher, was faced with such a choice after Wake County Schools told her that her request to teach remotely was denied. So she resigned, rather than put her 70-year-old mother at risk.
I was trying to figure out how I could feel safe teaching in person. And short of like a full-on hazmat suit, I'm not sure that there was a way that I would have been safe, felt safe teaching in person.
Barnett-Loro is hardly alone. Other teachers are retiring or leaving the profession, while others are reluctantly heading into classrooms and hoping not to get infected or to pass it along to someone in their lives who's at risk.
Thinking about this story generally, all of the teachers that I talk to, it's very much about fear. My name's Liz Schlemmer, and I cover education for WUNC. It's very much about mitigating risks because people don't want to die, and they don't want to feel responsible for the death of a family member. They feel that's a higher price than taking a hit to their pension that would haunt them.
So, Liz, how prevalent or common is this situation for teachers, that a teacher wants to teach remotely because they're worried about their own health or the health of a family member, but the school district they work for has denied their request?
I don't know for sure how many people have been affected, but it's been at least hundreds, and I do know some things that can provide some scope. So about a week ago, NCAE, the North Carolina Association of Educators, told me they had received complaints or requests for legal help from educators in six counties. NCAE is not a union because they don't have collective bargaining rights in North Carolina, but they are a member organization and they provide services, including legal counsel, to members about things like employment issues. Those six counties that they mentioned are in rural, urban, and suburban areas. Some are large, some are small. There's no clear trend connecting them. But one of the largest school districts they mentioned was Wake County Public Schools. So I requested data from Wake County Schools. It's the largest school district in the state. They employ about 20,000 people. And they have granted 1,500 requests for school-based employees who wanted to work remotely. They also denied 300 others. And they have about another 500 applications pending from people who applied in just the last few weeks. So they're a little less likely to be granted because they applied late. Then I called up teachers in multiple counties and talked to them whether they were directly in the story or not. And each one told me that they could count on their hands, they could personally count 10, 15, 25 people they personally knew who were denied teleworking. Some believe that every person in their county was initially denied the option to teach remotely, regardless of their health conditions. And one teacher I spoke with said she wouldn't be surprised if this was happening to some extent all over the state.
So as you mentioned, you spoke to teachers sort of in every corner of North Carolina. And one of them is named Shelley. We're not going to use her last name for some of her privacy concerns and some other reasons. Tell us about her. What's her story?
Shelley is a high-risk individual for complications with COVID-19, and she's a teacher. So the CDC lists 9 medical conditions that put people at high risk for severe illness. These are serious conditions, things like cancer, serious heart conditions, COPD. Out of that list of 9, she has 3 of them, including heart failure. So that means that her heart isn't able to pump enough oxygenated blood to meet her body's demand. She has a pacemaker. She gets easily winded. She was telling me that when her students have fire drills, she doesn't walk out with them in normal times because they have to walk up to the football stadium and that would exhaust her. So all along, she thought for sure if her school moved to in-person instruction, she would be allowed to teach remotely.
There's so many of us teachers who live with and manage high-risk conditions, and we're teachers, so it's part of our DNA not to wear that on our sleeves and walk around the building and flash our high-risk diseases, you know, in front of other people, because we're about helping other people.
She was very surprised when she was denied by the school district, along with several other high-risk individuals in her county. So she and her principal talked about it. They worked out another solution, which was for her to teach in a sound booth at the back of the school auditorium. So she's in the same room as her students in the auditorium, but she's in the back in a booth behind a plexiglass window, essentially teaching remotely, but in the same room.
So that's Shelley's story. She, as we mentioned, didn't want her full name used because of some privacy concerns. But other teachers did give you their full name and wanted to tell their story. One of those was Kelly Poulos. She's a high school teacher in Cabarrus County, or she was at least, because she felt she had to retire from her job rather than risk infecting her 84-year-old mother.
Kelly told me that she wanted to go on record so that her school board, her community would know that retirement was a really difficult decision for her and it was costing her. So teachers are eligible for retirement after 30 years of in-state service, and she had about 2 more school years to go before she'd be eligible. Since she has decided to retire early for her family's safety, she's going to be losing about $400 a month from her pension for the rest of her life. And because she's fairly young, I mean, that could cost her more than $100,000. And I heard from other teachers who also chose to retire early and were looking at even bigger hits to their pension. I think in many cases, especially in Wake County, many of the people who were denied, it was because they are personally healthy, like Kelly is, but they live with someone who is high risk. In her case, it was her husband, as well as her mom who lives with her.
When I was trying to make the decision, I was in tears, and it just kept coming back to the bottom line was worst case scenario was something that I just couldn't deal with, you know, bringing it home and my mother or my husband getting sick and dying or having health problems the rest of their life with it.
That's really at the heart of this story. Kelly told me she thinks if everyone follows the rules, the risk of transmission is probably going to be low. And recent research that NPR has reported on shows schools are generally not super spreader sites. Kelly said she thinks if everyone follows the rules, it's going to be okay. But she teaches teenagers, and she feels like that teenage factor means that, you know, the rules might not always be followed. Things might not go perfectly. And she's not willing to stake the health of her mom and her husband on it.
And so to be clear, these are district superintendents, administrators making these choices or decisions about what teachers can teach remotely, which ones can come into the classrooms. It's not something that the state is deciding. The state sort of leaves it up to each individual district and their individual situation. So what factors are the district superintendents or whoever's making the decisions at the district level, what are they taking into account?
There are real pressures on school districts to be open to their students and to be fully staffed with qualified teachers. You know, as you said, the Department of Public Instruction provided guidance to school districts, but the only thing they're really requiring is that social distancing and basic precautions are being met. I talked to Jack Hoke, who is the executive director of the North Carolina School Superintendents Association. He said the logistics of keeping schools fully staffed are really messy, and he's been hearing about this from superintendents.
You know, that's a real challenge to try to figure out how you meet the needs of the district and meet the needs of the individual employee. And sometimes you can't do that. I've talked to superintendents that have had 14 retirements in the month of September.
So there are a couple of things that make it difficult to staff schools. One is that substitute teachers are at a shortage right now. They have been for years, but also many subs are retired teachers and they're older. And many of them are also concerned about COVID risks and might not be willing to substitute right now. Also, teachers have to be certified in their subjects. So, you know, to teach art or to teach middle school or high school, you have to be certified in a specific subject. That makes it harder for schools to move teachers around, move them into virtual academies. And that's if they have a virtual academy, right? Larger districts like Wake County Schools have offered a remote option to any student who wants to take it, who's willing to commit to that for a year. Wake County has more flexibility because they have more teachers and more teachers that they can shuffle around to make these schedules work. And, you know, one of the pressures on schools has been that there are high-risk students, there are at-risk students who are struggling with remote learning, either because they don't have good internet access or they don't have an adult to supervise them, or they may not be in a safe home. And those pressures are some of the reasons that school boards have opted to reopen. But at the same time that there are at-risk students, there are also at-risk teachers. It's just about their health.
Liz Schlemmer is WUNC's education reporter. Hang tight, more in a moment.
Hi, I'm Russ Henry. I work with Dave here at WUNC. Hope you're enjoying this episode. I'll let you get back to it, but I need just a minute to tell you about some other shows from WUNC you may like. Our politics podcast is basically required listening as we get closer and closer to the huge election day in our state. Capitol reporter Jeff Tiberi is all over the issues, the elected officials, and the news that's driving debate and policy in North Carolina. And speaking of news, the State of Things podcast features conversations with newsmakers, journalists, artists, activists, and others who are influencing the culture of North Carolina every single day. Hosts Frank Stacio and Anita Rao offer a kind of up-close look at our state you won't get anywhere else. Check out the WUNC Politics podcast and the State of Things podcast right here on this app you're listening to. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode of these shows.
COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are on the rise in North Carolina. And with colder months ahead, health experts predict a possible spike in cases as people start to spend more time indoors. To curb a surge, doctors are imploring people to stick to the trusted 3 W's and to consider altered plans for the upcoming holiday season. Halloween is just days away. My daughter's one of those kids who's less interested in what costume she might be wearing and more interested in how to efficiently collect the most candy. She's going to need a new plan.
Trick or treat will not be as normal this year.
Dr. Emmanuel Walter Jr. is the chief medical officer at the Duke Human Vaccine Institute. He was recently part of a virtual panel of physicians from Duke to talk about staying safe this holiday season. He says trick or treaters should bring more than just a bag for candy this year. They should also carry hand sanitizer and wear cloth or surgical masks along with their costumes.
For those that are so compelled that they really want to do a trick or treat, what I would advise is that you not do it in large groups, that you keep it really small if you really feel compelled. If you're a person that's handing out candy, then you might consider putting the candy at the end of your driveway on a table in little bags, all realizing that kids may grab them all, but that's one thing that you might consider to keep it safe.
It is a different and difficult year.
Dr. Viviana Martinez Bianchi was also a part of the panel. She's an associate professor in family medicine and community health.
But now there are also safe ways to gather for the holidays. So a low-risk activity for the holidays will be to have a small dinner with only the people who live in your household. Think about preparing traditional family recipes for family and neighbors.
But in a typical year, colder months don't just usher in holiday festivities. Fall and winter also means it's flu season, which could pose a serious problem during our ongoing pandemic.
Getting a flu shot right now is extremely important. We have one viral illness that we can actually help to prevent spread, and we don't want to end up crowding hospitals with people with influenza when it's something that we have a vaccine for. We're already going through a pandemic of a viral illness. We don't want a second pandemic of the problems that went untreated or unchecked.
That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Charlie Shelton Ormond is our producer, and Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.